Jo Muirhead, and this is the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast, a podcast for health professionals who want to know how we continue to serve our patients and our clients without sacrificing ourselves to the work. More than a conversation on making money or just burning out, this podcast has been created to progress conversations that we need to have to ensure that we know who we are so that we can serve those who need our help, so that we can actually be the significant difference in the world. Welcome to the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast, Alyssa. It is so great to have you. Now, I haven't told you this, but I'm actually really looking forward to this podcast today because I've known you for 12 months and you have an incredible way of being able to think about the world. And you're somebody who is moving into licensure or credentialing or being having permission to do the work. And I think you have a lot of insights and opportunities for people like myself to learn what it is we don't know. No pressure, but yeah. I'll guide you through the conversation. But before we get into that, Alyssa, tell us about yourself a little bit more. You mentioned you're a dog mom. You mentioned that. What are you studying and why did you choose to study?
Okay, so I am currently studying to pass my national licensure exam for the United States. So I'm reviewing everything that was taught and not taught in school, in university. And I really like to relax. I really like to go on long walks. My dad and I have done 3 half marathons together.
Wow.
But my knees are getting old, so we're going to drop down to 10Ks and do more of those instead.
That's really sweet. Your knees are getting old. Ah, that's your knees have served you well. They have served you really well.
Yes, and I'm going to keep it that way. So I'm trying to listen to what my body's saying, even though my competitive spirit is like, it's just another 6.5 miles. Just keep going.
Yeah, wow. Oh, please learn that lesson now. That's very cool. So you're not 20, right? So
No, that was a hot minute ago.
So what made you turn around one day and go, that's it, I now want to study my master's and go through the rigorous process of becoming licensed to become a mental health professional? Take us through that thought process.
Yeah, so I think I'm actually trying to remember myself as I'm studying for this exam, like what made me decide to do this. Really, it comes down to people are valuable and they need to be shown that. And if as mental health professionals, we can give them an hour of our time to help them remember that they were created to be valuable and are valued for who they are, then that's a great thing to do.
Absolutely. And I'm hoping the people listening to this podcast today just got the goosebumps that I did, because that is the connection back to purpose piece that I feel like I'm put on the planet to help us remember. It's like I want to help health professionals everywhere be reconnected to their sense of purpose. So if we can give people an hour to help them remember that they're precious and they're valuable, why would we not want to do that? Way to go, Alyssa.
Thank you.
Gosh, so take us through the process, because I've got an international audience and I think Australians would be surprised by the amount of effort that goes into you becoming licensed in the US. Take us through the process. So you have to do a master's degree first, right?
Yes, you have to do a master's degree, which is usually I started in May of 2020 and I was done in May 2022. So it's about 2 years.
Yeah.
There are different opportunities to do online or in person. Mm-hmm. I chose to go online because, one, I was not going to move states to go anywhere in person, and the place I live in didn't have a program that I felt would benefit me as where I wanted to be in the future as a clinician.
Yeah.
And then COVID was happening, so it just was, I won't say it was easier. I'm not going to give that impression to people that it was easy, but it was just the way life was happening at that time. So there's that piece. And then each state, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think in Australia, once you become licensed, you can counsel throughout the country, correct?
Correct. We don't have the state-based borders that you have to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have state-based borders. So each state looks at a clinician's like, oh, okay, so you could practice in our state, but you have to at least pass the national exam and possibly our jurisprudence test, which is a test based on the legislation of that state. So, for example, after I pass my national exam, I'm thinking about taking the jurisprudence for the state of Colorado, mm-hmm. because it is beneficial in our here to have multiple licensures. However, okay. I probably won't be there until after I get my hours in as a candidate, because you have to have a supervisor in each state you're getting your hours in as well.
So if you got the hours in Colorado, how many hours of supervised practice do you need to engage in?
So for the state of Iowa, where I live.
Iowa, yep.
Yeah. I need 3,000 practice hours.
So yeah, I still fall off my chair when I think about that. That's it. Yeah. So it's not as simple as going to uni or going to college, getting your master's degree, getting a job, turning up and being job ready and getting paid to see clients like that. We just, yeah. So here in Australia, we don't do that here in Australia either, by the way. But the rigorousness of the supervision and the examination thing, I think is a little different. That's always been fairly confronting to me. Because I'm like, I didn't do anywhere near that much. But that's cool. So one of the reasons that I asked you to come on and be a part of not only this podcast, but also facilitate a symposium panel, yes. is because I want us to start thinking as a profession about what contributions have, you know, Gen Xers like me and the people who've gone before me, what have we made? What are we not doing so well? And what opportunities exist for the generations coming through? So I'm not going to just, I've got some structured questions for you now, because that's not a fair question. That's totally intimidating. So I'm just going to, and if you are a practice owner listening to this today, or if you want to build team, this is an important conversation, because the issues that Alyssa is going to bring up are going to be the issues that your team members have. And it's going to be much easier for you to learn and listen to them in this non-threatening environment than sitting down trying to have this conversation with your team members, right? Because Alyssa's not attached to you in any way. She's just going to say it how it is, which is why we love her. So what are some of the concerns that you have about your professional future?
I would say one of my concerns is AI. Mm. A lot of, there can be pros and cons to that.
Yep.
And with the generation, like I'm in my 30s, so as you often say, you grew up without the internet.
Mm-hmm.
I also did. So now with AI coming and being more a part of our lives and social media and all that, I'm a little concerned that the seriousness of our profession will kind of be taken for granted.
Wow. Okay. So you can see AI and potentially the rise of social media conversations about mental health as somehow devaluing. Is that what you're kind of saying?
That is my personal fear. I know there are good pieces to like social media and quick videos on skills that we can gain, such as grounding skills, but we all over the world work really hard to do what we do. And as I'm studying for my exam, I'm realizing that there is a significant difference between a counselor and talking to a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a influencer who wants to share with you the last 6 weeks of their journey and trying, and then you get excited about it and going, oh, this is going to cure my social anxiety disorder because this is what this person did. They drank water for 40 days or whatever. What? Yeah. Yeah. I can see that. Okay.
I wish I just drank one day.
Oh no, I'm talking about the water only diet. Anywho, I watch a lot of Instagram. A lot of my research comes from Instagram. It's a fascinating study in human behavior. Yeah,
which is great. So then, like with AI, they don't have the human as of now. I mean, they don't have that ability to like read the room and read what the possible client's trying to tell us, because we all know body language means something.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. They can, we can all do it. We all say one thing and our body's like, no.
No, no, that's great. So how, and I bet my assumption here is that our higher education schools are not incorporating how we as health professionals need to become prepared for the influx of AI into study. I'm assuming you haven't got a subject on that.
Yes. As I went through school and finished it, that had not really become a thing yet.
Yeah.
So they were still telling us to be blank slates, which.
Yeah, we know. Yeah. And like I have said time and time again, if we wait for educational institutions, regulators and governments to make the changes first, it won't happen. We need to advocate for the change. So Joe's soapbox moment. So AI feels like a bit of an intrusion, a bit of a threat, a bit of a devaluer of our skill set. Anything else about your professional future that might concern you that we can talk about?
That's the main one. I think my second one would be that clinician burnout, because then they I fear that they won't want to train other younger clinicians as well as they need to be trained.
Yep, I agree. I thank you for bringing that up. That's certainly a concern that I have had other people who are newly entering into the profession talk to me about, going, I can't find a supervisor. I can't find somebody who will mentor me. I actually had somebody reach out via social media going, you're all burnt out. Nobody wants to help me. And I'm like, whoa. And then my son, who is not a health professional, because I'm his mum, he actually says, Mum, why would people want to enter in a profession when everybody is all over social media talking to each other about how burnt out you are? I'm like, good PR point, sunshine. So on one hand, we've been like, we've got to talk about this stuff. We need to talk about this stuff together. But on the other hand, we're saying to the world, maybe we're not the people you need. Like, that's a crazy conversation.
Yeah. So then that also brings up another topic. How do we, which I think you posted a mini video about this, how do we care for ourselves well so we can continue caring for others?
Yeah. Yeah, I was confronted by that question this week because I was out walking Smudge and I was so resentful that I had to take him for a walk. And I was so annoyed that it was going to take me 45 minutes to do this short walk that he needed because he needs to do his things and he's a dog and I asked for it and I need to be out there and I need to be doing my self-care and God forbid I've got so many things. And then I felt myself talk and went, what the actual hell, Joe? Like, this is actually supposed to be about you connecting with Smudge, you giving your brain a rest because, it needs a rest. You enjoying your body because, look, you're moving pain-free today. That doesn't happen every day, right? And so it was just like, what am I so afraid of if I put my self-care first? Like, what am I so afraid of? That was a very confronting moment. So, yes, of course I shared that.
Hi, everybody. It's Paul Inglesian. And I'm excited to be contributing to the International Future Proofing Health Professional Symposium. I will be presenting on how you take care of yourself for the long haul. I hope you're registered and I will see you online in September.
Do you have any concerns about finances and how much you could earn as a clinician? Does that come up for you at all? Or is it more about how do I get looked after in this space?
For me personally, I'm not concerned with my finances. Mm-hmm. Just because it's a thing, like, yeah. Our profession ebbs and flows. We'll have clients, we won't have clients. Yeah. But I'm more concerned with the looking after part.
Yeah.
Because as you brought up, it's a bunch of us saying like, oh, we're feeling burnt out, but now the general public, mm-hmm. is realizing this. So then they're like, well, they put up this facade for so long. So how are these tired people going to help me be less tired?
Yeah, great question. So I think it's really important for those listening, because for those of us who are running a multi-clinician practices, we often think that the way we retain quality staff is by throwing more money at them. Because as Gen Xers, and using myself as the example, that's how we used to stay, because we were the generation that just worked freaking hard that led to the point where we're now so exhausted, right? So I want to make it really, really clear is that the generations coming through, they need wages to live on. They need good quality income, but it's not the only thing that they need to be taken into consideration. They are concerned about how you as an employer are going to look after them. Please look after your people. Yeah. Okay. So what are some of the things that you would like to see change in the profession of helping and health? So if you could have... money's no object, time's no object, you've got the special magic wand and you get three things to change. What are those things that you would like to see change?
That's great. Okay, so my first one would be I would like to have in classes study for the exam. I'm using an online program, which is fine, but mm-hmm. I do better in class. Yep. So that'd be like, just have that available. My second would be businesses in kind would donate each other's self-care to other people. So then those struggling are like, hey, I can't afford a gym membership right now, but I know that if I don't get out, and sometimes walking in nature is not someone's thing. Sometimes they really like the gym. So if they were donating a 3-month membership, that could get them on track. Just keep them on track, and then maybe within that 3 months they will be better, in a better spot to help them out. And same for like massages or just counseling in general, because the other thing I would change is that counselors would have good counselors to go to.
That'd be
my third.
I would never in a gazillion years have thought about that services in kind approach to self-care. And now I've got a whole brainwave happening about building a social enterprise that takes care of that need. But the first thing that came to my mind was like yin yoga, trauma-informed yoga, any of those somatic experiences, just breaking the isolation, getting people together to not have an intense chat, you know, the going and having coffee and just going, I get it, it's hard. But the good quality counselors that get the cultural needs or, you know, the specific needs of this population now, not the needs that they used to be or not from the textbook of questions you're supposed to ask. That's great, because it worries me that people are coming to me going, can you help me find a supervisor? I can't find anyone. But that's in Australia and in the US. Now, we know that the clinical supervision directory exists to help bridge this gap, but she needs some help. She's looking for the quality supervisors. That's a great discussion. Thank you so much for bringing that up. So if we could create the ultimate, the ultimate 6-month self-care package, because your parents are counsellors, right? Can you create for me the ultimate self-care package for your parents for 6 months? You've got 6 months, time and money is no object. What are we going to put in this package?
So my parents do a unique thing where they're co-counselors and they are in the room at the same time with their couples. So mm-hmm. it's called co-therapy. It's great. I wish all counseling was kind of like that. So for them, I would include a weekly date night, And they do that anyway, but then if money is no object, then I would include my dad. They are gym people, so I'd include a gym membership.
Right.
I'd also include on their wish list is kayaks. They really like to go kayaking. I don't like to get wet, so I prefer to watch them from the shore. And then I think I would also include 2 weeks paid vacation to wherever they want to go.
Nice.
But it has to be, but my caveat would be it would have to be a time zone away, so they can't actually deal with work because oh no, it's 8 a.m. and it's like midnight where they live. So then they can actually just relax.
And disconnect completely.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a really cool package because we often think that self-care needs to be, you and I have talked about this, it's almost like a transaction. I'm self-caring today, so I'm taking myself to get my nails done. And, you know, it's just so limited. I'm not saying don't do that. It just needs to be a part of what we do. I was having a conversation. I was interviewed for another podcast yesterday and the conversation came up. It was like, Joe, who are the people in your world that help you stay healthy to do this work? And we wrote a list. So the things that I have a physiotherapist in my world because I do a lot of sitting, right? Mm-hmm. And I also have a range of musculoskeletal things that need taken care of. So I have a physiotherapist in my world. I have a massage therapist in my world because I hold a lot of tension in my body. When I'm doing clinical work, I have a clinical supervisor. All the time. In Australia, we don't stop that once we get credentialed. We need to keep that going. We've got to have that in our world. I have a coach, somebody who helps me think, right? So I have a coach in my world because it's a different relationship than talking about my work clinically. So the coach in my world. So we're up to four people. then I've got, you know, the people that help me with my exercise and going out and doing all that sort of stuff. I also have an executive assistant and I have a business manager. They help me. So already we're up to seven people to help me. And I don't think we've really spent enough time thinking about what it takes for us to turn up healthy.
Yes.
Yeah. That's really cool. Thank you for bringing that up. And let's see what we can do to bring about this change. Okay. So you've got your parents. So you've got some great role models in your world doing this work, aka your parents. But I'm starting to introduce you to other people in the world and you're going to be talking to them during the symposium as well. So what are some of the lessons, whether they're positive or negative, but what are some of the lessons that you've learned from the people who have gone before you in this industry?
So positive, just keep going.
Yeah.
Like I said before, clients ebb and flow, and it's really easy to get discouraged when the list isn't full. Because real life happens and we're adults and we have bills and it becomes overwhelming. But just keep going because you usually have that one client come back and say, hey, remember when you told me this? I used it and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, I don't remember saying that, but yay. Good job. And it's nice because when that happens, the client brings back the value that we forget as clinicians that we do have as human beings.
Yeah, nice.
So that's a positive. Let's see. I'm negative. I would go with putting off self-care.
Yeah, wow.
It's a fad phrase right now.
Mm.
But if we break it down like self, and then stop it there. And then we just period. And we go down to care and we break that down. And we don't put it together. That really could change a perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is why I've tried to talk about care of self. How do I care for myself and change the conversation? Because I think we get these buzzwords and phrases and we hear them so much that they become meaningless. We just let them, it's kind of like they're just water, they just wash off. So I'm trying to interrupt that conversation by going, how are you caring for yourself? How are you caring for yourself? And because I struggle with this. I really do struggle with it. It's not been easy for me. But I don't want my, selfishly, I don't want to get to the point where I need more, like I need more help from health professionals. And the only people available to me are burned out, overextended, exhausted, overcaffeinated, overstimulated, disengaged health professionals.
Right.
Because they're not going to provide me good care.
No. So those are my one negative and one positive.
Yeah, nicely done. You've done very well there. So do you think that with the symposium coming up, you're going to have the opportunity to speak to three people, Australians and Americans, who have been doing this work for quite a period of time, like 30 years plus?
I'm so excited.
So what's one of the things that you want to know from these people?
Honestly, how do you take potty breaks during the day?
Nice.
Without feeling like you're putting others out?
Such a great question. I'm going to hold you to that because that's not just a funny question. That question opens up so much discussion for how we actually relate to our work. Very cool. All right. So, Alyssa, when we get together again in real life, yes, in real people, which is probably going to happen next year, and we go to a cafe, what coffee are you ordering?
So my body doesn't digest coffee. Fun fact about me.
Excellent.
So I drink chai. It will probably be hot always. And if I'm feeling, if my extra sweet tooth comes in, I'll probably be a vanilla chai with coconut milk, or it's just a general normal chai.
Excellent. I can do that because that's fairly short and sweet. And I'll probably look at you going, have I asked for this correctly? Beautiful. So Alyssa, if people wanted to get to know you a little bit more before the symposium starts, where can they find you?
Well, I'm not really anywhere.
Oh, but you're in the future-proofing health professionals Facebook group. Uh-huh.
Yes, I guess I am. But this is how it, that proves how much I'm like on Facebook. So, but if you wanted to like read my bio, and you could go to realconnectionscounseling.com. Yes. I'm currently the program administrator there, and I just got a little short one. And you can also read all about the dogs I've already mentioned.
Ah, that's great. I actually made sure Smudge was not in the room today because I wanted to focus on this conversation.
Oh, yeah. My dogs are in their nap time.
Great. So, Alyssa, thank you so much for being a part of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast. I really appreciate your candid conversation with us today. For those of you who want to know more about Alyssa, more about the Future Proofing Health Professionals Facebook group, and the symposium, which is coming up this September, head to the show notes. Come find me on social media. Let's make sure you don't miss out. And until next time, go be your awesome self. And that is another episode of the Entrepreneurial Clinician Podcast done. I just want to say a big thank you to all of the people who make this podcast possible. Debbie, Annie, Vince, and Jen, you are my A-team. Without you, I couldn't make this work. And in the spirit of respect, please ask for and receive permission before you use any of my intellectual property, because you know what? Not giving appropriation to creators is just not cool. Until next episode, go be your awesome self. Oh, and before you forget, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review. That's kind of important. Go do that.